start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York, I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can never sleeps and find I'm a number one, top of the list, king of the hill, a number one. These little town blues. It's up to you, New York, New York.
Having this episode of Mike Crispy Unafraid, my voice is still recovering, but the sake of the country is on the line. We got 7 days. And we got a lot going on. We got early vote numbers in New Jersey looking amazing. I'm going to give you guys a quick update on that. And then the Joe Rogan, President Trump saga hits a new level. Kamala Harris now saying that she will do the podcast under what conditions. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to show you what YouTube and Google doesn't want to show you. That is some Trump Rogan, okay? People are telling me, texting me all the time, where do I find it? So we're going to show you a lot of it. So listen, everybody, we need you to help us get this party started by rumbling this video. You guys know to do that. That is a thumbs up on the browser. That is a thumbs up on the mobile app. You click it, you hit it, you tap it, you share this, and you get us to the top of the Rumble leaderboards because it is the only place that we belong. So we got a big program for you today. I'm ready. Producer Frankie's ready. You better be too. And let's go. And hello, everybody. Mike Crispy here, coming to you live from New York. And, you know, I got to tell you, usually I get a day or two to rest my voice or whatever. And that's how I get it back. But obviously, we have no time to spare because the country's on the line. So, you know what I said to myself? I said, today is a very interesting day because a lot of people are continuing to ask me about the Joe Rogan President Trump interview. If you go on Google and search Trump Joe Rogan, normally it would be the first thing that would pop up if it was any other interview at any other time with any other two people. That was the most popular thing on the internet in the last 10 years, right? Can't find it on the internet right now because it is actively being censored. If you go to YouTube and search Donald Trump, Joe Rogan, it doesn't pop up. There's been multiple reports of people not being able to find it, even on Joe Rogan's YouTube page, it going from listed to unlisted and just being a pain in the ass. Now, Frankie said to me earlier today, if it was findable, it would have over 100 million views at this point.
Easily.
Frankie, do you still stand by that? How are we doing, Frankie?
Great, great to be here, Mike. We pray for that voice. It's just, you could tell. I mean, it's almost like a coordinated. No one's ever seen anything like the. It was literally gaining like 2.5 million an hour, like as soon as it came out. Like it was just climbing, 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 climbing. But now you could just imagine that there, if Kamala is planning on actually joining the show and going on it, which it seems crazy to me because that would be the end of her career as we know it. They just want her to have more views, I think, personally, because everyone's going to want to see her fumble like an idiot. It'll be easy to get to those. It'll be easy to get to those numbers with Kamala because people just genuinely want to see how much of an idiot she comes off as. Like it's entertaining. So I mean, literally, Mike, you cannot YouTube Joe Rogan, Trump. You'll be on like the third or fourth page. You'll find it, but it's a joke. And then you see all the ones that were pushed to the front, like it's just like an NBC clip, and that has like 500,000 views, 300,000 views. They're just subverting the views to other videos away from Rogan. It's a joke.
And then the leftists say that the censorship on our side doesn't exist. It's actually very laughable. So I will tell you this, and then we're going to roll some of this Joe Rogan Trump interview, because again, that's what this is about. It's about Rogan and Trump, and there's no better way to get the truth out for us to do our part than to show you a lot of that interview, which we're going to do in a minute. But I have one thing to say about Kamala Harris. Here's a breaking update from this morning. Joe Rogan put this out. Frankie, did you see this about Kamala Harris doing the show?
No.
So Kamala Harris, no, you didn't see it?
Nuh-uh.
Okay, so this is pretty new. So Kamala Harris said to Joe Rogan that she would do the show under these two conditions, and it's bullshit. She said she would do it if it was 1 hour long, so she will not do. So think about it. The biggest podcast on the planet, and she can only give it 1 hour, okay, 1 hour long. And then the best one is that she wanted Joe Rogan to fly to her. yeah.
Woo!
So Kamala Harris went to Shannon Sharp for that podcast on his location, went to those other NBA players who did their podcast on their location. So she can fly to, basically athlete podcast. Oh. And she also flew to the Call Her Daddy sex podcast. So Frankie... She's flown to all these podcasts, but for Rogan, she wants Rogan to fly to her, and for the time clock, because her time is more valuable than Donald Trump's, I guess, to be limited to 1 hour long. So, I mean, it's just totally disingenuous from the outset, and she's going to say, well, he didn't agree to it, but it's amazing how she's setting these terms, and she's setting the terms so she could say, oh, look, I said I would...
He's never done a podcast outside of his studio one time. Oh, yeah, we'll do it for you, Kamala. Yeah. Okay.
Like Donald J. Trump, the most famous man in the millennium, went to him and went into his Austin, Texas studio and then had a rally before and then had a rally after. It's actually like think about it. Everyone's like, oh, Trump is tired. Trump is like, it's such like, it's just like saying that the rally that Frankie and I attended was the Nazi rally. It's like, oh, he's tired. He literally had a mega rally, had, tens of thousands of people. Then he goes to the podcast for 3 hours. Then he flies to Michigan and then he has tens of thousands of more people. It's just like, it's 9 straight hours of talking. I actually said to myself, I don't know how this guy has his voice. Like, I'm very impressed, again, from a guy who is talking all day long, who loses it. Trust me, he takes one to no one. I don't know how he, like, it's more impressive than anything that the guy literally doesn't lose his voice. Anyway, so those are the terms. So, all right, so we're going to roll into some of that. Again, because people cannot find it. They continue to tell me, even my own mom said, I cannot find the Trump Rogan podcast. People are always asking about it. So we're going to do that. But before we do that, I want to roll you guys a quick message from our sponsor, Armra Colostrum. Guys, what a great product. Producer Frankie's wife takes it. And here you go. You want to try it? I love when he goes that. You want to try it? Roll it.
The biggest benefit, honestly, has been with my skin. My skin was more hydrated, more radiant.
This is the best superfood that you could take.
It has all the essential nutrients you need for your skin, your gut, energy, focus, mood, performance.
My hair has gotten so much thicker ever since taking this.
I used to have a probiotic, a green juice that replaced it all with this Arma colostrum. It is amazing.
You gotta take it.
If you wanna try it, try Arma.com.
Let's go. Tryarmra.com/LFATV. And also while you're at it, you get 15% off and you'll feel amazing. And also while you're at it, speaking of feeling amazing, if you're having problems with your money, okay, you got to go to donewithdebt.com. Tell them LFATV sent you. They're the brilliant debt relief strategists that will help you get out of debt once and for all. Guys, do not let those bills pile up. Do not get into a jam. Do not get into further debt. You got to act right now. These solutions are time sensitive, so you need to get in touch with them right now. I'm talking like today. If you're having any problems, donewithdebt.com. They will deliver a custom solution for you and your family to get out of debt once and for all. And I'm telling you, people are like, whenever I'm speaking softly, somebody from the Trump campaign called me yesterday, a good friend of mine, actually, won't name names, but he called me and I was talking to him and I was like speaking low. He's like, are you feeling okay? I said, this is why I don't like to speak not in my normal voice, because everyone thinks that like I'm like dude, I'm feeling amazing, just my voice box isn't keeping up here. So and then my dad texted me yesterday and said, Mike, you sound like RFK Jr. on your podcast yesterday. I said, all right, enough is enough. I gotta get it together. So you know, tonight we have Newsmax coming in to film live on location in New Jersey on our next stop of America First Republicans. And so we're gonna get this voice back. We're gonna be good. Speak softly and carry a big stick, says Robbie Sunshine. That's great. And when we do roll some Trump Rogan, which is what we're gonna do, I'm gonna be in the live chat the entire show, watching it and reacting to it. So how about that? Pretty cool. Frankie also. So without further ado, guys, our next sponsor of the show are our friends at over at iTarget Pro. Frankie Rolla. I mean, very, very cool. iTarget Pro laser firearm home training system. So easy to use. Laser bullet into the chamber of your firearm. Dry fires into the target or the cubes. Syncs up in real time, tracking your accuracy. And that is how you become a sharpshooter, okay? Okay, those illegals, okay, who are trying to come in and take over neighborhoods? Not on our watch, guys. So this is not an ad. This is a PSA. iTargetPro.com, promo code Crispy. If you don't do it, you are a sitting sheep duck. I don't know what's worse, Frankie, to be a sheep or a sitting duck. I mean, I think they kind of go hand in hand. All right, we're going to roll right back into it. Frankie, we're going to roll right back into it. And I don't know if I ever went to commercial break. I don't think I did. Okay. So we're going to roll into the podcast. So again, we're going to roll you some Trump and Rogan.
It's about an hour in.
Yeah. What they will not show you. So the first hour of it was essentially him talking about like what it felt like to be the president. Like he was like, oh, like, do you have any, like, you know, did you have any, like, you know, were you had these inhibitions? Like, were you excited? Were you nervous? Like, was it different than you expected? And that's kind of like the first hour of it. Like they're talking about that and what he thought about that and how people are trying to get jobs and, like, you know, some of the things that he learned. And then obviously, you know, we come to you an hour in and we pick up where, you know, the substance kind of went in all different directions. And it was very impressive, actually, because Trump in the one-on-one casual setting, I mean, he talked like a human. He was relatable. He had a lot of context and depth on a wide variety of topics. I mean, this really, I think, was great for Trump. And even the liberals were saying that. Even on the Young Turks, they were saying, listen, if you don't like the ideas, I mean, the guy still was extremely articulate and likable and normal. So here you go, some Trump and Rogan.
But let me give you one that you may not know.
Okay.
Which I think you know everything, actually. As a student of yours. but water, you know, in Los Angeles, you can't get proper amounts of water.
Right.
And it's unbelievably expensive. And you might have a house in Beverly Hills, and they're actually thinking about rationing water. Can you believe it?
I can believe
and
it. I
was
there.
I was in the farm court country with some of the congressmen. We're driving up a highway. And I say, how come all this land is so barren? It's farmland, and it looked terrible. It was just brown and bad. I said, but there's always that little corner that's so green and beautiful. They said, we have no water. I said, do you have a drought? No, we don't have a drought. I said, why don't you have no water? Because the water isn't allowed to flow down. It's got a natural flow from Canada all the way up north. Water, mm-hmm. More water than they could ever use. And in order to protect a tiny little fish, the water up north gets routed into the Pacific Ocean. Millions and millions of gallons of water gets poured. You got to see this. We're driving up, and I had never seen it before. It's the most, it's like Iowa. It's the most fertile land. Iowa's blessed with great land. Idaho for a potato, right?
Yeah.
But these, they're just, by the way, you know, some land is good for a potato, some land is good for corn. It's the craziest thing. I love the farmers. They're great. They're the greatest. And by the way, they're getting killed right now.
They are.
They're getting killed because of this stupid administration. But so I see this, and I said, you got to be kidding. I said, you mean you have water? And I looked at it. It's like a valve in your sink, except it's massive. The thing's five times taller than your ceiling.
Did you know the center of California was a giant lake?
They have so much water.
You ever see what it looks like before they rerouted it?
I never saw that,
The center of California, like, what is it, 200 years ago? How long ago did they do that, Jamie? The center of California had a fucking enormous lake in the middle of California.
So they dumped it into the Pacific.
Who knows what they did, but whatever foolishness that they did led to the situation that they're in now.
Think of those dry forests that burned down all over the world. You know, the head of Austria said,
here
you
is,
know.
Tulare Lake or Tachi Lake. It's a freshwater lake in the southern San Joaquin Valley, United States. Historically, Tulare Lake was one of the largest freshwater lakes west of Mississippi. Show a photo of what it looked like back then.
That's a great system.
So that's what it looked like. Look at that image. Now, go to the one on the third from the right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an enormous lake in the middle of California. Imagine that.
That'd be much more valuable property.
How crazy is that? Oh, but how crazy is that? That's what it used to look like. And human beings screwed that up.
No, they let it go into the Pacific, and then they
I don't know what they did. What did they do? How did it go missing?
It said they drained it in
83. Yeah, they drained it.
1983. Oh, my God.
It went dry a handful of times.
Well, you know, lakes do go dry, but that's a big one.
But think of
it's
it.
A big one to go
you
dry.
You could have all of the water you need. All of that land would have more water. The whole thing could be like that little patch.
Yeah.
Literally, I'd say I was with Devin Nunes as a congressman and other congressmen. We were going up. I was visiting that because they asked me to go up and visit their territory, and I did. But I kept saying, look at this land. It's beautiful, but it's so dry. And I thought they were going through like a desert, like a drought. They said, no, we have water, but it gets rid. So I looked into it.
What is the fish?
And I got it done. I got it done. I could have water for all of that land, water for your forests. You know, your forests are dry as a bone.
Yeah.
Okay?
Dangerous.
That water could be routed. You know, you could have everything. Oh, not only dangerous. Billions of dollars a year they spend on forest fires. And, you know, there's a case with the environment. They're not allowed to rake their forests because you're not allowed to touch it. When a tree falls down, after 18 months, it becomes very dry. It's like, you know, like real firewood. It's bad. You know, a tree that's up, these are all things I learned the hard way, the easy way. But when a tree is up, it sucks water. It's wet. I went to they had a couple of horrible forest fires in California. And I said, you know, you had a lot of trees standing. Yes, they were healthy trees, sir. I said, with this intense heat, that you could see they were charred a little bit on the bottom, but they were going to be all right because they're soaking wet because they suck up the water, right? But when they fall, they're like, you know, it's like lighting a match.
Yeah.
And you got to be able to clean. They call maintain your forest. So I was with the head of Austria. He said, you know, it's a shame. I see all those forest fires in California, and all they have to do is clean their forest, meaning rake it up, get rid of the leaves, get rid of, you know, leaves that are sitting there for 5 years. And
we'll certainly get rid of the dead fall.
And get rid of the trees that have fallen, that, you know, are like, so many things this country. By the way,
could you really rake the whole forest, though? I don't think you could rake the whole forest.
Well, you could,
I think you
could
get rid of the dead fall, but raking all the leaves.
You could certainly get rid of the dead, okay?
Yeah, they the real issue.
You know,
is the
environmentally,
dead fall.
They don't want to do that. They said, you know, it's got to be nature and all this stuff. But in the meantime, this is exactly right. But you could have, so It was the Department of Commerce that needed the approvals, but Gavin Newsom had to sign them. I got it all done. Nobody could believe it. It was all done. I said, I got it. You got so much water. All you have to do is sign. And that guy didn't want to sign.
Did he not want to sign because that would be a political victory for you?
I think, no, he didn't. No, I don't think so. He used to say he's a great president and we got along. We did. We actually got along at that point. But I think somebody said you just can't continue to call him a great president. they do say that. But we had it all done. He didn't sign. And then we got onto other things. And I every time I go to California, I said, you have so much water. They don't know it. I'm telling you, people living in Beverly Hills, they turn off the water. Same thing with the electric. They want to go to all electric cars, but they have brownouts every weekend, you know.
Well, right after they made the announcement that as of 2035, you're not going to be able to buy an internal combustion engine in California. Yeah. Like within a month, they had some announcement asking people to not charge their Teslas. Because the grid couldn't handle it. Well, how are you going to handle it?
I will terminate the mandate immediately. Just
good,
a mandate.
Thank you.
That will be done, I would say, in my first day, maybe 2 days, because, you know, it's
let me ask you about nuclear. One of the things that when I've talked to people that have a real understanding of nuclear power, what their position is, it's probably the cleanest, safest form of electricity that we could generate. And that the fears of nuclear power are really about a few disasters, the Fukushima, Three yep. Mile Island. These are old systems, and that they're much more capable now, and they're capable of making even better systems. But it's a difficult political issue because you think nuclear power, you think Chernobyl. That's what everybody does. They have this connection. They have the potential
or Fukushima,
disaster.
Which
or
is,
Fukushima.
Well, you're not supposed to enter the land for 3,000 years
yeah.
or something.
It's crazy. I think it's worse than that. I think that area is like going to be radioactive for probably longer than you could imagine. But the point is they're better at it now.
Right.
And that they could do it now, and you can generate power in a way that you don't have to worry about these. One of the most ridiculous things is electric cars being powered by coal-fired plants. It's a ridiculous thing.
So what's happening?
Yeah, that is what's happening. And people want to think they're being green, you know, but it's...
Well, you look at the way the battery is made. But here's the other thing.
Right.
We don't have... Well, we do, actually. It's being held. You know, we have certain areas where we have great raw earth material, and we're not allowed to use it because of the environment. And we have areas in California that have incredible raw earth, and they're not allowing... And I'm going to open it up. I'm going to let them use it.
But how do you do that?
China.
How do you do that and protect the environment?
Because the environment is going to be protected. You can do it. You can make a lake out of it. Okay, we'll put back a lake. I mean, something nice about lakes. You can do things magnificently.
You just have to do it carefully and responsibly.
Absolutely. You have to do it carefully. But the problem, you know, China has all of those areas, most of those areas. And yet, when they say go electric with the cars, China is going to be the one that gives us the cars. All of those guys in Detroit are going to be out of business. You're going to make your electric cars over there. We have a thing called gasoline, and we have more oil and gas under our feet than any other nation. You know, I had in Alaska, there's a find. It's called Anwar. I got it approved. Reagan couldn't get it. Nobody could get it. I got it all done. It was amazing. They were getting ready to start drilling. The equivalent, they think, of Saudi Arabia, one of the biggest finds in the world. It was all set to go. And Biden comes in. One of his first orders were, we're not going to use it. It would have been so good for the... We could have supplied all of Asia with oil and gas.
What was the negative?
And you talk about money.
Right.
The negative was politically they didn't think it was good for them. That's all.
That's all it was. So you don't think that it's environmentally dangerous?
No, taking it from way down deep in the earth, environmentally it would have been fine.
So it can be done responsibly?
Absolutely.
Oh, otherwise, the point where it protects the environment.
Well, I think windmills. Okay, so they talk about windmills.
That's a good
point. I think windmills are really disruptive. When you talk about the environment, they kill the birds. You want to see a bird cemetery? Go under a windmill someday that hasn't been cleaned out with all the bird carcasses. Like massive amounts of
birds. Well,
they're
also a massive eyesore. I went to a ranch in South Texas, and we had to drive past this enormous windmill farm, and it's gross. It's dystopian. You're looking in the left and the right, and all you see is these big spinning machines that aren't even that effective at generating electricity.
Correct. Most expensive form of electricity is a windmill, and then they start to rust and rot.
And you have to
replace
them?
And then they get
them?
Abandoned by the people that built them. Because,
well, you have to get rid of all that material, too. When you replace those blades, now you have a problem because you have to dispose.
Yeah.
Right. You have to dispose these enormous windmills. And how
by the
do you
way, they say
them?
You can't bury them. So I even question that, but I'm not going to get into it. But they say you can't bury the blades. So you have the blades, and you can't bury the blades. You can bury the blades. It's not going to matter. You can bury the, you'll find areas you can bury. But they come up. This is what I mean. They come up with this. But the environmentalist dream is windmills, everyone. You know what happens to them? After 5 years, they start to rot. After 10 years, you have to replace them. Did you ever look at certain parts of California where they have heavy windmills and they've been abandoned? And they're all different manufacturers and all different companies, and they all...
I haven't seen that.
It is the ugliest thing. It looks like a graveyard, almost, a graveyard of windmills.
It's pollution.
It's so bad.
It's no different than leaving garbage on the ground.
How about in New Jersey, off the coast of New Jersey, they want to build... The people are going crazy not to build them. But where you have them, the whales are washing up on shore.
Right.
So... In 50 years, they had one whale come ashore. Now they had like 18 come in the last year.
What is the what is happening with the whales? I've read about this.
Well, they say that the wind drives them crazy. You know, it's a vibration because you have those. You know,
right.
Those things are 50-story buildings, some of them.
Right, and they're 50. Super sensitive to vibrations, you know,
they have
and
those,
sounds.
They, you know, the wind is rushing. The things are blowing. It's a vibration, and it makes noise. You know what it is? I want to be a whale psychiatrist. It drives the whales freaking crazy.
Yes.
And something happens with them. But for whatever reason, they're getting washed up on shore. And, you know, and yet the environmentalists...
Conveniently ignored by the environmentalists.
Yeah, but the environmentalists, they don't talk about it.
Right.
I think there's nothing uglier. I see it in Scotland. I see it all over the world. You have this beautiful valley. It's been there for, you know, in civilization, thousands of years, but millions of years. And all of a sudden, you have these ugly... windmills up.
Would your plan to be replace that with nuclear? What would you do?
Well, nuclear is better. I mean, I think there's a little danger to nuclear, but, you know, we had some really bad nuclear. They did one in Alabama. They did one in, I think, South Carolina. They do them wrong. They build these massive things. Then the environmentalists get in. I don't want to go into a long story because it's too long for the show. This show is too valuable to talk about concrete. But they have hardened concrete. It's number 12 concrete. It's the hardest. It's harder than steel. It's incredible. They put up a wall and an inspector comes along and goes, nope, you're a quarter of an inch. The wall might be 8 feet wide. You're a quarter of an inch too short. I'm sorry. You got to rip down the wall. Because it's got to be poured contiguously, right? You're... 1/4 inch. I'm sorry, rip down. You can't rip it down. This stuff, you can't put a hammer through it. You can't. It's incredible. Concrete technology is unbelievable. What's happened? You think of concrete.
So you think that's an example of overregulation?
Yeah,
pointless.
No. Well, you have an inspector that comes along and he says, take down a $25 zillion wall. These things ended up costing $25 billion, and one of them never got opened. But here's the story. So France does it. France is largely nuclear, and they build small, little, compact plants. And if they need more, they build the same thing, and they hook it up, and they hook it up, because they get too big and too complex and too expensive. And it is very clean. They say it's absolutely... You know, my uncle, I had a great uncle who was a great genius, just like other members of my family. But he was a professor at MIT... for, I think, 41 years. He was the longest. So when I was in the White House, the head of MIT, Princeton, and Harvard came down to meet me. And the MIT person said, I have a book on your uncle, Dr. John Trump. He was our longest-serving professor. He was a great genius, sir. Do you know how? And he had, he knew everything about nuclear, from math to chemistry to nuclear. He knew it. And he said, someday it's going to be the way to go, but the problem is it's so dangerous in terms of war. He said,
right.
Donald, someday, and this was a long time, Uncle John, Dr. John Trump, he said, someday you'll have a little satchel at your side and you'll go into a building and you'll be able to blow up New York City. I said, Uncle John, that'll never happen. He's right. You know, he's right.
Well, that was
the
part
power
of the problem
is so crazy.
With giving nuclear power to other countries, right? Like,
well,
that was the problem that happened with India and Pakistan. They got nuclear power, and then they were able to weaponize it.
The biggest problem in the world today is not global warming. It's nuclear warming. And we have idiots that are negotiating for us We have a guy that doesn't make it past 4 o'clock, and it's not because of age. You know, they ought to. I know so many guys in their late 80s, and they're better than them. I said to one guy the other day, I think you're smarter than you were 25 years ago. I've known him a long time. He's 89 years old. He's sharp as, I mean, he's great. Biden gives people a bad name because that's not an old, that's not an age. I think they say it because I'm 3 or 4 years younger. You know, I think that's why they say it. They say his age, it's not his age.
He's
got a problem.
Two major brain
operations.
Surgeries.
Yeah. He did. Those are not good operations.
And do you see what he did today? He went running towards the camera and made some apology to Native Americans. And that he said that's why he's headed out west. Like, he's off the reservation, so to speak, for lack of a better term.
You know, it's interesting because during the debate, I was looking over. I'm saying, this is strange. It's just sort of like strange things were happening.
Yeah.
But
well, he couldn't keep it together. But do you think they knew he couldn't keep it together?
I think so.
Do you think that they wanted that? Is that why, like, historically, that debate was earlier than they've been in the past, right?
I think they wanted to get, well, there's a lot of theories. A lot of people said, do the debate now and we'll get him out.
Right.
I think that maybe could be.
Well, that is what happened.
But that's so what happened.
It's logical.
I think they also said, do the debate now and get it over with.
Right.
I don't think anybody thought he was going to get out, really.
No,
I don't
it didn't
think
make that. Any sense.
The debate got him out, but I think it's very unfair. Look, you have a bad debate. His numbers went down. But I think she's not doing very well right now. And I think she looks...
Well, I want to get to that, too, because it's hard to know. Like, the whole poll thing is very bizarre for most people, because most people don't answer polls. So they read the polls, and they're
were
like,
you
who's
ever
getting polled? I've never
poll?
Been polled. If I did,
called.
I'd hang up.
I was never called by a poll system.
If I did, I wouldn't answer. I'm busy.
You know how polls are done? I'm going to get myself
please.
In trouble. But so I really don't believe too much in him. So,
well, 2016 taught a lot of people about the ineffective
polls. Well, they were very ineffective, because I thought I was doing well. I'd go to a place, and I'd have... 30,000-40,000 people. Hillary would go, they have 500 people, and they tell me I'm going to lose. I said, why am I going to lose? I had 40,000 people. She had 200 people. But, you know, I have a theory. These pollsters, they charge you a lot of money, too. You know, they charge you $500,000 to do some stupid poll, and they interview like 251 people. I don't think they interview them in many cases. I don't want to get myself in too much trouble.
You think it's bullshit?
No, I think they sit there, they make a deal, they get $500,000, and they say, Trump's leading 51-49. They announce it, and everybody says, oh, do you understand?
I really
don't. Look, I'm a very common sense person. I think that they probably don't always poll. Some of them probably never poll. What's the difference between 49-51 and 47.5?
Well, it's also a tiny percentage of the population. I don't think it's representative of the overall population. I just don't think
it is. I don't
know
of one person in my whole life that ever got called by a pollster.
Exactly. That's my point. So here's my question.
But I shouldn't say that because I'm doing very, you know, really well in the polls.
But
now.
I think that's...
So this week I happen to believe in a verse. I only believe if they're good. No. I like them this month. But no, I honestly believe that there's probably a lot of fraud. I had a poll, Washington Post, ABC, in the Hillary thing on Wisconsin. They had me down 17 points the day before the election. I knew it was wrong because I had a rally. I had 29,000 people at a racetrack, and it was like 0 degrees, Wisconsin. And they had me down 17 points. In other words, you had no chance. And I won. And I called up my pollster, who's a good guy, good guy, and I believe he's legitimate, and you know, some of them aren't, some of them aren't. I said, tell me, why did they have me down so much? I mean, nobody's going to believe them the next time. They said they don't care. When you're down 17 points, people are going to stay home. They're not going to vote.
Right.
Because they're going to say, I love Trump, but I'm not going to waste my time. It's cold out. I said, but what do they make at 4 or 5? He said, at 4 or 5, they're going to go and vote. At 17, they're not going to go and vote.
So
but think of it. I was seven. This is a Washington Post ABC poll. I was down 17 points in Wisconsin, and I won. It's crooked stuff.
There's a lot of crooked stuff, and I wanted to talk about that too, because one of the things that people talk about with you is the denial of the results. And I think J.D. Vance did a brilliant job the other day when he was being interviewed, and they asked him, did Trump lose the 2020 election? And he turned it around and said, was there legitimate election interference in suppressing the Hunter Biden laptop story on social media? And was that a concerted effort?
Well, they said it made 10-point difference, and I lost by one tenth of a point.
It is.
They say it was 22,000 votes, but look, it was much more than that. And I appreciate J.D. Vance saying that. And by the way, I think he was a great pick. Do you like J.D. as a
player? I like him a lot. Yeah,
you're allowed to say that. As,
no, I do. I like him a lot. I think he's a brilliant guy, and I think his ability to talk like a normal human being. He did. You did my friend Theo Vaughn's podcast,
right?
And he just did it.
How did he do?
He did
it?
Great, and he just talks like a normal human being.
Is that why you called me to do this?
No.
He was a nice guy.
Once they shot you, I was like, he's got to come in here. It's all about timing. It's all about the timing.
I think our
timing's perfect. Do you even have a scar on your ear? You got anything on there?
I do.
What do we say? What do you got
so,
there?
Right over here.
Oh, it's a tiny little mark.
It zicked right there.
Yeah. It healed up pretty fucking good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's little. It's not like some of the wrestlers, some of the UFC fighters.
No, you didn't get cauliflower ear.
No. It was sort of like a top shot.
Mm-hmm.
The point of the bullet was a little of the ass, but you see the thing's taken off a little bit, but it makes me a tougher guy. You know, the fighters, love their, Bo Nickel, he's a great fighter.
Yeah, I love Bo Nickel.
How's he going to do? I think he's terrific.
He's great. He's a fantastic fighter.
He was almost like undefeated in college.
He's a fantastic wrestler and one of the best mixed martial
artists.
When
is he fighting again?
He's fighting in Madison Square Garden in November.
Oh, that's going to be an after the election?
Yep.
So I'll either go as president or I'll be depressed and I won't bother going. I think they're having a fight right after.
One of the things that was fascinating also was the denial of the election results is a pretty common thing. Hillary Clinton famously denied that she called you an illegitimate president and she said that Russia put you in place.
Even though she conceded.
Yes.
She conceded the night of the election because she was beaten.
Yes, and it was a thing that was pretty common for people, especially Democrats, to deny the elections. There's been many of them. The Bush administration, the dangling Chads, all that stuff.
Well, look at these guys in Congress, all these sleazebags in Congress that are Democrats. They're still denying 2016. But now they don't so much because, they try and pin it on me. You don't hear them say.
But here's my point.
They denied it right up until the end.
My point is, this idea of election fraud is a forbidden topic, and you get labeled an election denier. It's like being labeled an anti-vaxxer if you question some of the health consequences that people have had from the COVID-19 shots. Oh, my God, you're an anti-vaxxer. If you say, and what I say publicly, and I've said this a lot, it's not 0%. So if you ask me, what is the amount of election fraud in this country? Is it 0%? No one thinks it's 0%. I've never met one person, not a super liberal, progressive, far left person or a right wing conservative. Not one person thinks it's 0%. They think when you have human beings and also you have a lot of weirdness that was going on during the 2020 elections, particularly with mail-in ballots.
And you had legislatures that had to approve and they didn't approve and they went out and did it anyway. And you had old-fashioned ballot screwing. I mean, you had you have people going up and dropping in phony votes. You had unsigned ballots, et cetera, et cetera.
There's certain people that and there's the rhetoric is also that you're Hitler and that in order to stop Hitler, you have to do whatever it takes.
That was okay, yeah.
Yeah, and this is, you're hearing this now. Kamala compared you to, said your love of Hitler yesterday.
Kamala's a very low IQ person. She's a very low IQ. I'm for taking tests, too. I think anybody that runs for president should give them tests. And it's not an age thing. It's not based. If you look back on history, 70s and 80s, some of your greatest leaders in the world history, longtime world history, they were in their 70s and their 80s. But I think you should take cognitive tests. I think they say it's unconstitutional. But I think Kamala should have a test because there's something missing. There's something wrong with her.
Well, I think it's pressure. I think the pressure and the scrutiny, you've been a celebrity for a long time and you understand what this is like. But for someone who's in her late 40s, who becomes the vice president, who runs for president, becomes the vice president, and then all of a sudden the weight of the world is on your shoulders and there's all these people paying attention. A lot of people clam up.
But they either have it or you don't.
Correct.
Look. This is an interview. We've covered a lot of territory, right? And it's fun. I don't care. I want to. I think it's much more interesting. To do an interview with Anderson Cooper, a softball, crazy softball interview, she took 2 days off and she studied all day long. And then she comes out with a result that was a real embarrassment. That was a really bad interview. She couldn't answer a question. And every question is not answered. I mean, like, what would you do your first day in office? Okay, I'll build a wall. I won't build a wall. There's 100 things you can say. Just say anything, right? There's something off with her.
Well, I also
We're dealing with the smartest people. They hate when I say, you know, when the press, when I call President Xi, they said, he called President Xi brilliant. Well, he's a brilliant guy. He controls 1.4 billion people with an iron fist. I mean, he's a brilliant guy, whether you like it or not. And they go crazy.
Right. Say, it doesn't mean he's not evil, or it doesn't mean he's not
Of course not.
Dangerous.
But actually, we have evil people in our country.
Yes.
If you have a smart president, he can deal with Russia. He can deal with all of it. Russia would have never gone into Ukraine if I were president.
How would you have stopped it?
Automatic. Two things. I told him. I said, Vladimir, you're not going in. I used to talk to him all the time. You're not going in. I can't tell you what I told him because I think it would be inappropriate. But someday he'll tell you. But he would have never gone in. But you know why else he wouldn't have gone in? Oil prices at $40 a barrel wouldn't have allowed him, wouldn't have given him the money to prosecute that war, wouldn't have given him the money. I said it with President. I was with President Xi. I said it was almost the same conversation. With Vladimir, it was Moscow. With President Xi, it was Beijing. It was almost the exact same conversation. I said, don't do it. He would have never done it. The day I left, they flew 28 bombers over the middle of Taiwan. 28 bombers. And it's the apple of his eye, and the same thing with Russia. It's the apple. Ukraine is the apple of his eye. I used to talk to him. I had a very good relationship with him. He wouldn't have done it. He would have never done it. But he also wouldn't have done it because of the... You know, one of the reasons that what happened is, number one, he doesn't respect Biden at all. Not even a little bit. And who the hell would? But he doesn't respect him. But when he saw what happened in Afghanistan, how horribly that was handled. Number one, you take the soldiers out last, not first. Okay, that was their big mistake. And we had that thing charted out, and they weren't obeying us. They weren't... Abdul is the head of the Taliban. Boom, boom. He had to do all these things. Some he didn't do. I said, nope, you're not doing it. You got to do them all. This guy took... He immediately took all... He left the equipment behind. 13 soldiers dead, but he took everybody out. He took his soldiers out before. A child would know. That's where Milley was so stupid. He was such a stupid guy, Milley. Okay, those generals should have all been fired. The people that were involved with Afghanistan should have all been fired. Then they'd be writing books about him, how stupid he was and bad he was. But you take your soldiers out last. I had a big rally, and I saw a child in the front row about a year and a half ago, and I called the child up. I said, do you mind if I borrow your child? Oh, yes, please. And they came up, kids 5 years. I gave them quick details, you know. I said, we want to get out of this place, and we have this, and we have this, and we have the equipment. I gave them a little thing. I said, do you take your soldiers out first or last after everything's done? You take them out last, sir. A child would know that. We took our soldiers out first. And we left Bagram.
Well, not only that, we left billions of dollars worth of equipment and military vehicles that they use for parades now.
The best equipment, yeah, to embarrass us, the best equipment in the world.
The Taliban parade where they've got tanks rolling down the streets and Blackhawks flying is the craziest thing I've ever seen.
We left the best equipment in the world behind.
What would you have done differently?
Well, number one, we would have taken it out. Just so you go back a little bit further. I had a couple of conversations with Abdul, and from the time I had those conversations, because they were shooting our soldiers, you know, with the sniper stuff, they were shooting a lot of them. They were shooting a lot with Obama, much less with me, but they were shooting them. And I said, get this guy on the phone. The press went nuts when they heard this. I had a great conversation with him. It was a tough conversation. 18 months later, there wasn't one soldier that was ever shot at. And even Biden admitted it in a moment of stupidity because he shouldn't admit it. His people went nuts. He said, yeah, well, I will admit, no soldier. We didn't have a soldier killed in 18 months in Afghanistan. Not one soldier was killed because he understood what was going to happen if that happened. I didn't have one soldier. Then when I left, after having gotten more votes than any sitting president in the history of the country and much more votes than he got in 2016, when I left, they started shooting our soldiers. But more importantly, what they did is they did that whole thing with, you know, leaving. He shouldn't have left, number one, should have left from Bagram, because Bagram's this massive base. It's got tremendous acreage around it, tremendous. It's a very big, it was built many years ago. And part of the reason you wouldn't have taken that is because it goes to China. 1 hour from where China makes its nuclear missiles, you should have never left Bagram, number one. They should have left from Bagram. They should have left last. They should have gotten, you know, we have Americans that are still there. They should have taken all their equipment out. Everything, every plane, every screw should have been taken out, every tent. And I said that, that's when I realized that Millie was a dummy. I said, we're leaving, but I want to get everything out. Sir, it's cheaper to leave it. I said, what
it's
do you mean
cheaper
leave it?
To leave
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he said it's cheaper to leave it. That was
cheaper.
His, cheaper. He said it's cheaper. Sir.
Not more dangerous.
He just said cheaper. I said, I want every plane. I want every tank. I want the goggles. They have night goggles. They have all this stuff that these guys now have. He said, sir, it's cheaper to get out and leave it. I said, so you think it's cheaper to leave a $150 million brand new airplane in there than it is to fly it out with a tank of jet fuel and put it in Pakistan or just fly it directly back? It's cheaper to leave. I said, this guy's nuts. I'm telling you, he was so stupid. He was so unwise. He was like an unwise man. And there were a number of them. But I defeated ISIS with the greatest generals. I had a guy who was so great. I flew to Iraq and I met the real generals, not these idiots that we deal with. And we knocked out, you know, I defeated 100% of the ISIS caliphate. They said it would take 5 years. I did it in a matter of a few, literally a few weeks. And we hit them hard. And he said, sir, we're going to hit them here. We're going to hit them there. We're going to hit them here, there. And I said, this guy's great. I like this guy. I was told it would take 5 years. That's why I went. I said, how could it take 5 years? We have brand new fighters. We have the best planes, the best weapons, the best guns, the best bombs. How could it possibly take that long? And I flew to... I flew and left at 3 o'clock in the morning. Nobody knew I was going. I got on Air Force One and we started flying. And when we reached about half an hour away from Iraq, that was where the airport was, big airport, about a half an hour away, they said, sir, I'm sorry, you'll have to turn off all your lights. Why? We're getting close to our site, our land. I said, you mean we spent $8 trillion and we can't leave the lights? So think of this. 20 years, $8 trillion, and we can't leave the lights on in a plane. I said, that's okay. Turn the lights on. I'm not going to fight them. That's one
this is because it's too dangerous?
Yeah, too dangerous, because they yeah. see the light up in the
they'll
air.
Shoot
and
they'll
shoot at it, you know? So I said, turn the lights off. Then they said, sir, we're going to also pull your shades if that's okay. I said, that's okay. The plane was pitch black. All the lights outside, you know, the blinking, they call them the blinking reds, they were all turned off. And I like to sit with pilots a lot of times, and these guys are specimens. I always say they're better looking than Tom Cruise, okay? And they're even taller, like perfect specimens. These guys, like for a fighter, you know, you have some guys that are perfect specimens. These
right.
guys, and, you know, they pick the best pilots in the Air Force, United States Air Force, to fly Air Force One. And I get up there, and... I'm sitting and I'm feeling my way up. You know, it's up high because 747, so you go through the stairs, but I sort of knew my way up. There wasn't a light in the plane. I'm saying, can you imagine? We spent trillions of dollars and we're trying to fly in blind. But I got into the plane. The cockpit is dark black, little tiny light. You could see the pilot, a perfect looking human being, his co-pilot, everybody was perfect. They were all like movie stars. You know, it's like I could have cast a movie with these guys and nobody would believe it because they were too good looking. So I said, how are we doing, Captain? Sir, we'll be landing in 10 minutes. And I look outside, there's not a light. And I'm saying, you know, I've landed a lot of planes. And you see like little lights at least. There's nothing. It's just pure desert. And I said, okay, Captain, good, but I'm looking. Now we're, you've been in many planes where it has the computer sign saying 1,000 feet, goes 1,900, 800. It's a computer voice, but it sounds like, but it's an incredible voice. 700. I say, Captain, are we okay? I'm looking, are we okay, Captain? There's no lights. And I'm looking, you know, normally when you land a plane, because I sit with pilots a lot. I think it's great. I think it's a great profession, everything. It's incredible. They're incredible. These machines are incredible. He said, "Sir, we're fine. No problem, sir." I said, "You know, I don't see the lights up there, Captain. Sure, we're okay, you know." So, I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit. You know, problem with exaggerating, they'll tell the story. They'll say, "Trump was a coward." So I'm sitting with him. He goes, 500 for, and I'm telling you, there wasn't a light on the runway, nothing. And we're going in. "You okay, Captain? Everything good?" "Yes, sir. No problem. We'll be down in about 1 minute, sir." And I'm telling you, Joe, you know, there's always a light. There's not a little pin. And all of a sudden, psh, and you hear, blah, blah, perfect landing, like glass. That's how good, I mean, these guys, between the equipment and the, it's genius. It's pure. It was so dark, you couldn't see a thing. There was no runway. You wouldn't know where the hell you are. You're in the middle of a desert. And then I got out of the plane. I said, "Thank you, Captain. That's a great job." And then I got out of the plane, and I'm going down, and I see a general and another general. And I see a staff sergeant, a drill sergeant, and a various guys, all central casting. Central casting. They said, "Sir, would you like to rest?" I said, "I don't want to rest. I want to figure out what the hell are we doing with ISIS. I'm hearing we can't. It's going to take years." "No, sir, we can do it very quickly, sir." And anyway, we go into the room. We go in. I mean, Biden would have taken a nap for 4 days and then left without a meeting. So we go into the room, and they have these guys. I say, "How long can you do it? How long?" "We can do it in a couple of weeks, sir." I said, "Wait a minute. They told me 5 years. We can do it in," I don't know, he gave me a number, like in no time. I said, "Why haven't you done it?" "Because the orders came in from Washington, sir, and they would come here and tell us what to do. Don't you challenge us?" "We're not allowed to do that, sir. That's not the military way. They tell us what to do, and we have to respect them."
Do you think that it was incompetence why they didn't go after ISIS?
I think it's a bad system. You know, when Mattis goes there or when Milley goes there, who's stupid, and they tell these guys that are actually smart what to do, and the guys that are smart are saying, "We don't like what they're doing," but they're not allowed to sort of counteract. Plus, the guys that went there are arrogant. You know, they're arrogant fools. They're like stupid fools. The way they pulled out of, you know, the way they, as an example, the way they pulled out of Afghanistan with the people falling off the planes.
Yeah, it's a disgrace.
It was worse than Vietnam with the helicopters falling. It was so bad. There was no reason for it. Anyway, so we knocked them out. And, I mean, we have great military. We have great people, but not the television guys. And I rebuilt the military, and then they gave a chunk of it. Now, I have to tell you, as much as it is, it's a tiny little piece, believe it or not. We have an unbelievable. I rebuilt the military. I rebuilt our nuclear. And in a way, I hated to redo it, but I got to realize how powerful that nuclear is. Joe, one bomb, Israel is gone, but forget. One bomb could take out the entire East Coast. It's so bad. And I watch these poor fools talking about our oceans will rise 1/8 of an inch over the next 500 years. I mean, we have people, we have countries. Right now you have 5 countries. And don't underestimate North Korea. If you take a look at North Korea, I was there. I mean, I was with Kim Jong-un. I had a great relationship. I got along great with him. You know, the president, he got along great. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. Obama thought we were going to go to war with North Korea. When I met with Obama just prior to the takeover, you know, you meet, you have a sort of a ceremonial meeting. But it lasted a long time, a lot longer than it was supposed to last. I said, "What's the biggest problem?" He said, "North Korea." By the time I finished, we had no problem with North Korea. We were really, it was a little tough at the beginning, remember?
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I have a red button on my desk." I said, "I have a red button also. But mine's bigger than yours and mine works."
I liked how you called him Little Rocket Man.
I said, "Yeah, Little Rocket." I said, "Little Rocket Man, you're going to burn in hell." And it was a rough.
Yeah.
Oh, so rough that people were worried. This is crazy. And then one day I got a call, sort of like a fight. I got a call. You know, you ever see one of them pounding? And then all of a sudden, but I got a call. And it was from him, meaning his people. They wanted to meet. They wouldn't meet Obama. He tried to meet. They wouldn't even talk to him about it. And I think he expected to go to war. I actually do. I believe he expected to go. And we checked their nuclear stockpile. It is substantial. I mean, I said, "Do you do anything?" I got to know him very well. I got to know him better than anybody. And I said, do you ever do anything else? Why don't you go take it easy and relax? Go to the beach. You have beautiful beach, nice beachfront property. You know, kiddingly. I said, you're always building nuclear. Just relax. You don't have to do it. Let's build some condos on your shoreline. They actually have gorgeous stuff. And he said, I just have to do it because I need it for my safety, et cetera. I got to know him very well. We had no problem with him. If you have a smart problem, if you have a smart, a really the right president, a smart president, you're not going to have a problem. And I say it to people, we have a bigger problem, in my opinion, with the enemy from within. And it drives them crazy when I use that term. But we have an enemy from within. We have people that are really bad people that I really think want to make this country unsuccessful. When you look at what's happening at our border, Joe, when you have people coming in that when other countries are allowed to empty their prisons into our country with murderers, we had 13,099 murderers dropped in our country over the last 3 years.
And 15,000 rapists convicted.
Rapists?
Yeah.
Drug dealers, drug lords.
And that's just the ones that have been accounted for.
Correct. People from mental institutions.
What do you think this
hundreds
strategy
to
is?
Hundreds of thousands of major criminals, tougher and worse than anybody we have.
We're seeing the consequences of it in San Antonio. They've taken over apartment buildings. In Aurora, Colorado, they've taken over apartment buildings. These Venezuelan gangs.
Just the beginning.
What do you think the strategy is? You know, one of the things that they've said is that you stopped a bill from being passed. But didn't that bill also include amnesty for the people that are already here?
Joe, this is years after the fact. The damage was already done.
But what was the bill?
Well, and the bill was the nothing. It allowed 2 million people in. They were going to get amnesty. It was a horrible bill. It didn't protect us at all.
But we should just tell people what the strategy is. So one of the things
their strategy,
one of the things that's been very clear is that they've moved a large percentage of these migrants that are coming across the border illegally, they've moved them to swing states. Like, this is what's going on with Springfield, Ohio, right?
They're in swing states. Well, that's not a swing state. I'm going to win Ohio by a lot. So that's not a swing. But it's called Springfield, Ohio, to be exact. And Springfield, Ohio is this very nice community of 52,000 people that just had 32,000 migrants that don't speak the language dropped into their community. You can't get into a hospital. You can't get into a school. It's gone from a beautiful little place to a horror show. And the mayor is a nice guy. And the mayor says, we're looking for interpreters. I said, no. You've got to remove them and bring them back to their country. Mostly Haitians in this case. But they speak no language. They speak no
English, man.
In fact, even the language they do speak, they can't get interpreters. They can't do anything. And the mayor's trying to be politically correct. They're all trying to be. In Aurora, Colorado, you have the worst gang. MS-13 might even be, you know, those two are the worst gangs. These are Venezuela gangs. They have taken over apartment complexes, and they're going to want to take over the whole thing. And you have a weak governor, pathetic governor, who's a radical left Democrat. He doesn't know what the hell to do. But you have it in many other communities, but they don't like to talk about it because it's bad for the community to talk about it. These people have been let in here by this imbecile. She's a low IQ person. Low IQ.
Right, but it's obviously not just her. There's a strategy that's involved in letting these people in.
Well, she was in charge of the border.
Well, she's in charge of the border, but they also utilize that app, the app that used to be used. It used to be used, I think, essentially, wasn't it for shipping? Wasn't it when people were in this country?
It was used for shipping, and now it's used to deal with the cartels. The cartel, heads of the cartel, rich people, by the way, these are loaded. These people have so much money. They would call up. Think of this. They call up the app, and the app tells them where they should take their load of illegal migrants from the Congo. You know, we have a lot from the Congo, prisons in the Congo. I made a little bit of a sarcastic joke. A man named Dana White, who you love, who I love. I assume you love him.
I love that dude.
I think he's in a class by him.
He's probably the reason why you're here.
I don't know, maybe.
He's one of the big ones.
He is the greatest guy.
I love
you know,
him
I always say, nobody's indispensable. You know, everybody can be replaced. Maybe you can't be. You might not be. But Dana White, truly, I don't think. you know, the things he sold it for $4 billion. I said, what a hell, who the hell is going to pay $4 billion? And they made like a great deal.
I mean, it's because worth a lot of
him.
More than that now.
Take him out. I think it's a whole different.
No, he's the best fight promoter.
And he's also
of
the
all
greatest
time.
Guy. He spoke at the whole thing with, you know, I had just been shot, and he got up and he spoke so better than anybody. I mean, who would be better to introduce you? I asked of all the people, and I know the biggest people in the world, and they all would have loved to have done it. I said, Dana, would you do it? You know, it was interesting. He was away. And he said to the people that, you know, one of my guys called, said, I won't be able to do it. I just left with my wife and family. I won't. I said, he said, no, yeah. I was a little surprised, even though I knew he was very far away. He was in some place, you know, and he deserved it with his family, you know, the whole thing. And then I said, all right, let's, and so we're looking who we're going to get. And all of a sudden she comes in. Sir Dana White just said he's going to do it, and he's coming back in tonight. He's taking it. You know, the guy is just an incredible guy, and he's like a tough champion.